Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Shintaro Higashi Show with Peter Yu. First and foremost, thank you to our sponsors, Jason Levon, Fuji Sports Judo TV. Thank you very much. You too can support us. Let us know. Join us on Patreon. Do all the things. You too can support us. We'd love to have you as a sponsor. Love to.
Yeah, and there are a lot of tiers on the Patreon, and depending on the tier, we can give you a personal shout out. Jason and Levon are our biggest sponsors, so we give them shout-outs every episode. You can be on their list.
Yep. Yeah. You'll be like this. Hey, JoJo, what's going on?
Yeah. We love you, JoJo.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. All right. What are we talking about today?
Teaching judo.
Yeah. How to be a better teacher, judo teacher.
Better teacher, better learners. They all go hand in hand, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's very, very common for us to teach the way we've been taught.
Yeah. And we've said a lot about the traditional way of teaching, just like, hey, do your 1,000 of chikomis, 2 hours of randori, all that,
And when you're teaching something that scales like a curriculum, you don't create free thinkers, you don't create innovators, you don't cater to the top tier of the grappler in the room, right? Yeah. You're always teaching sort of to the middle, you know what I mean? And that's just how the education system is structured. If you look at Common Core, or any of the school things that you've kind of been through, okay, memorize the times tables. Right? Memorize this. Memorize the vocabulary. Let's all read a book and talk about it, right?
Right.
And if you're a brilliant genius like Peter who went to Princeton, you'd be really bored out of your mind, the whole time.
I don't think I was that bored. Yeah.
You're bored. Were you challenged in school?
Yeah, in certain subjects. I wasn't too good at English.
That's because you're trying to get up. We know that.
Exactly. English tripped me up. Before we go move even further into this topic of educational system, you guys have to know that this guy, Shintaro, has a master's in it. He knows a thing or two about teaching kids, the education system, and also we're not really talking out of our asses here.
Yeah. So I have a master's in teaching, English specifically. English to speakers of other languages, right?
Yeah.
And I stretched this 2-year program to like 6 years because I was on and off with it. I hated it so much. It was part of this thing. My dad was like, "Oh, you got to go get a master's degree." Yeah. I don't give a shit what it is. Just go get a master's degree. I figured like, all right, here's a good idea. I'll get a master's in teaching. I'll be a teacher from like 9 to 2 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll train the rest of the day.
Yeah, that's possible.
That was literally my plan. I was like, all right, work from 9 to 2, but boy, that's not how it is when you work for the New York City Department of Education.
Oh, good. I mean, you have to grade papers, design like lesson plans and everything after
school. Lesson plans, you get pressured into staying after school, you got all these meetings, there's so much other stuff involved. It's a full day thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, I hated it.
So you decided to become a judo teacher by carrying that knowledge over to here. Yeah.
I mean, I did a lot of stuff in between. I sold REITs. I was a salesman. I did pharmaceutical sales. I did lots of different stuff.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
The point being, I took this 2-year education, right, when I got a master's degree in teaching. The one thing I got out of the entire thing, right, between like reading Chomsky and reading all these articles and papers and stuff like this, the number one thing really was to differentiate instruction so all the kids in the room are challenged in different ways. Right?
Okay.
And then obviously classroom management, because you can't manage a room full of kids if they're misbehaving.
Right.
So how do you like lead that? You know, how do you make sure the kids aren't talking out of turn and doing all this stuff? Having structure, and then having every kid in the room being engaged in a way where you're differentiating it so it's challenging at the right level for everyone.
So one way you know, we'll talk about class management after this, but one way to challenge everyone keep people engaged was to keep the instruction short, right? Would you say that's one of the strategies to keep everyone challenged, engaged?
Sit there for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Half the room, even more, will tune out because no matter how interesting you are, people have very short attention spans.
Yeah.
If you're teaching at the night, after a long day, these people have been at work all day, their attention span is already so fleeting.
They're
there to work out. They're there to be inspired, to learn something, to be engaged, right?
Right.
So it's got to be in short bursts. So I teach 3 to 5 minute increments always, right?
Right.
And then it's something that is a practical thing that they can do to teach themselves the thing. Right. All right, we go snap down game position. cut the sleeve, whatever it is. I'll do a backwards throw and a turn throw. Whatever backwards throw you do it. Turn throw, you do the parlay it. How to connect it to is the placement of your foot. So this is like an intermediate to advanced thing. So now, Johnny might do a coachy, cut the hand, drop Senagi, right? And then maybe I go up to him like, dude, you're really doing good with that. Instead of going drop Sei, why don't you go Sode to the opposite side? Differentiate. That's interesting for him.
I see.
Not going to give that same instruction to the big guy who doesn't do a turn throw like that.
So this way, you don't necessarily have to divide the class, like have the beginner's class, intermediate class, advanced class all together, all separate. You can keep them all together, but you can give a, basically give an open-ended topic, I guess, in judo, and then let them fill in the blank.
And then in the beginners, the brand new guys will be lost.
Yeah.
They have no idea what they're talking about. That's why I have a separate beginner's class. Right?
Right. You do have separate beginner's class. Yeah.
Okay. And you need, this is inside trip. This is outside trip. This is an arm throw. Try it. Go do it. You know, 10 and 10. Don't give unsolicited feedback.
Yeah.
You need that a little bit in the beginning to have like, all right, these are the moves. Okay. Now higher order thinking. How do these moves fit together?
Yeah. I see.
How do you create a game out of these separate techniques?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where is the gameness? It's not Osoto by itself. It's not Ochi by itself. It's not putting them together, right? It's hand positions, setting it up. Is the person going for counters, right? Main lines of defense that the opponent might do. Stringing together those two things with feints, timing, right? Putting those two things seamlessly together. You know what I mean? So the gameness is in between those two techniques.
So do you not show any... But you do... I know your class, but you do include some demonstrations during the instructions.
Yeah, yeah, so I demonstrate it, yeah.
Yeah, so you give one example and then you let people do other things? Or how do you...
I'll give you an example. Right versus right, we're 50-50.
Yeah.
Okay? So now we're talking about hand position. I want a game position. I want to push this hand up, raise this
hand. Yeah,
yeah. Everyone knows this is very difficult to do. Here's some things I might do to set it up. I might feint and then cut the sleeve hand.
Yeah.
The hand that I'm grabbing onto their collar... It's their sleeve hand. I'm going to try to cut their sleeve hand off by ripping my elbow in.
Yeah.
Okay? It's following me so far. As the hand gets loose, I'm going to punch this hand down. I have game hand position.
Yeah.
I might go for a back attack, which is going to be Ochi in this case. Inside trip, create space. When I feel the person giving back, now I have a turn throw. And because my hand is in dominant position, I'm much more likely to get it.
Right.
I can go for Harai. Here's an example. Bam, Harai, show bang. Right? But it doesn't have to be Harai. It could be Senagi. It could be Taitoshi. It could be Uchimata. Whatever you want to do, you do, right? So that's an example of me teaching a sort of a... That is closed for me.
Mm.
That's a closed exercise.
Right.
But the variables you fit in yourself.
Yeah.
Whatever technique that you do. It could be Kosoto to Tayo. It could be Koichi to Sode.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do, right? We're going back and forth on this plane. It's sort of a linear thing back and forth, and you're playing off of that. And you got to make sure you're feeling your opponent to get the reaction. Because you're attacking the reaction.
Right. So you're not giving like completely open-ended, like, oh, it's a 50-50 situation, figured it out. Then there will be like, people will go all over the place. Actually, then people will be lost and then they'll lose. Yeah. They will not be engaged in the class, right?
So I'll do exercises like that. And that's a little bit more of a different exercise, right? That's a little bit more like, I'll do some of these technique segments where we're focusing on specific sequences, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then... Throughout that time, I'm talking about hand position and feints and different concepts that will kind of like you get internalized little by little because you hear me talking about it every single freaking time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we're going to go to 50-50, right? Collar sleeve. I give them prompts and guides. Okay, the goal is to get your hand above the person's collarbone.
Yeah.
Your hand higher. Yeah. And then your opponent's collar hand, you're going to try to bring it below your collar hand.
Right,
collarbone. Right. Here are two ways to do this.
Yeah.
If he's pushing down on the arm, you can't lift your arm anymore, so you pull him in the direction until they lose their balance, so now there's no tension on the hand, and then you could choke up.
Yeah.
That's one way, right? Second way, you're trying to choke up and then move the collar hand, you start pulsing the hand downward, right? Downward, downward, downward to choke the slight hand. And if you can't bring the hand down, you bring the whole gi down by shifting your whole collar.
Uh-huh.
Right? So there's two.
Mm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, doesn't work. What are some options from there, right? You take the collar hand and you try to rip it like we did in the early sequence.
Yeah.
Okay? So now you have three tools that you can kind of circulate through.
Right?
Okay, guys, go try it. By the way, this is not a competition. You're not trying to win every exchange. Right. You're going to let the other guy go and win too. It's a back and forth, give and take, feel oriented thing.
Yeah.
So now you're spending time on this specific task, right? Without the repercussions of getting bombed.
Yeah. Because we're not throwing here. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not throwing there. So you're getting in position. You're losing position. You're trying to work out of that position, right?
Right.
There you go.
Right.
And then for the higher guys, all right, you guys could do ashiwaza also, right?
I see.
So side dashi, feint stuff. I try never to like let anyone throw anybody during these exercises because sometimes we have 40 guys on the mat.
Yeah, yeah.
And because we're in a small New York City dojo, people will land on each other's knees. Right?
Right.
So these kinds of guided exercises are really, really good for learning.
Because it's self-contained enough that people can work on it in a limited amount of time, but also it has enough variables inside of it that you can all people of all levels can do their own thing so that they stay engaged.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Another example: right side versus left side, inside or outside position. Who gets to decide inside or outside position?
Right.
Collar.
Whoever reaches first and open like inside outside. Whoever starts the inside, I guess, gets to decide?
No, whoever puts their hand on the collar first.
Yeah, right.
Because if you have the collar on the hand, they don't have that collar on the hand, you can prevent them from getting inside position.
Right.
And then you let them go outside. If you want outside, you have the collar hand, you could prevent them, and then you let them feed inside, right?
Yeah.
So getting that first hand on is a very important skill.
Yeah.
All right, guys, right side versus left side. The goal is to put your hand on the collar. Not grab it, just touch it. So you're trying to do distance management. You're trying to learn how to parry that hand coming up.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like doing orthodox versus southpaw, just jabbing to the face essentially, but it's a little bit lower by the collar.
Yeah.
So it teaches the people to keep your hands up. I could stay forever until my face is blue. Like, all right, keep your hands up. You're going to put your hand here.
Yeah.
Right? When they get Rondori time, they're going to forget. Their hands get down. They're tired. They're not managing distance. But we're going to specifically do this drill.
Mm-hmm.
2 minutes at a time, maybe three rounds of this. So you get 6 minutes of just working in this range.
Right?
It's like, don't get too crazy because you might throw your finger and then jam in the eye. So start off in like nice and easy.
Yeah.
Don't even keep score, right? It's okay, right? Bait it, parry the hand, put the hand on. Here are a couple of different tools, right?
Yeah.
Reach back like a pull counter, like a boxing.
I see.
They reach for the collar, you pull back, they can't touch it.
Yeah.
And then as they're bringing their hand back, you go and touch your collar.
Oh.
Right? Or you leave the chest open, they go to grab the collar, you parry the hand down, and then you touch the collar.
Yeah.
So, like, now we give them two or three different tools, and they could just go figure out the rest themselves.
Right. So, this is more, this type of guided exercise, as you put it, are, we want to use them because for hobbyists, which are the majority of the judokas in the States, they don't have enough time, mat time, to be doing all kinds of like exploration all by themselves, like they do in Japan, like the collegiate athletes in Japan, right? Yeah. So they haven't spent, like collegiate athletes in Japan, professionals and semi-professionals have spent their entire lives honing these skills from their early age.
Yeah.
And then, so they are skilled enough that if you just have them like randori for 2 hours, they're going to figure different things out, right?
Yes.
We just can't afford to do that. That's why we're emphasizing this guided thing.
And it's not just time. It's not just time. It's feeling safe.
Feeling safe. Right,
and
I see.
When you're in school, and when you raise your hand to answer a question, and Johnny the bully is like, oh my God, I cannot believe this retard. It's like you are afraid to ask questions and say things in class.
Right.
So now all of a sudden you're in a kind of an unsafe environment where you can't really speak up and give your opinion because people are going to laugh and think you're dumb.
Yeah.
Right? Especially if you have like a strong Asian accent and like, aha, gotcha, whatever. Right? So like you want to like limit that.
Yeah.
And if you're in a safe environment where you can take risks and say things and, you know, have open dialogue about anything and everything. Right.
Yeah.
You know, you should be able to give your opinion about certain hot button topics without offending people.
Yeah.
No, seriously, right? Yeah, if you have more open conversation, the more you can learn from all the party. You know, same thing in these environments. Like, you're taking the risk of getting thrown out of the window. And you're working in this subsection. And there's no repercussions of wins or losses. Because it's like, hey, you're letting the guy win too.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So it's a give and take.
So it when encourages, you
lose, yes. And when you lose position, you could stay in it.
Right.
And work on being in bad positions. Because the better you are, the less time you spend in bad positions if you're doing randori.
Yeah. There's a relevant concept in AI similar to this. It's called exploration versus exploitation.
Mm.
So you want to give an AI agent enough freedom to explore, but at the same time, that means you have to sacrifice on efficiency, because it's like doing random ass things that may not even pan.
Yeah.
So you also want to restrict the freedom in some sense to exploit what works best.
Yeah.
So it's a balance. So you want to give people enough freedom to try different things out, but you don't want to give them too much freedom so that they go off the wrong ends, you know, that will never work.
Yeah, like if you're playing chess, you don't want to move your A pawn up one.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Like,
that's a horrible opening.
I don't know A3, which it.
Pawn A3.
So we want to prune all those bad behaviors early on, kind of like through beginner classes, to give enough contextual knowledge so that people can explore different things.
Yes,
the right way. Yeah,
and I think a lot of schools are doing that, and they call it like games.
Right? Yeah,
grip fighting games, or this game, or first hand touch, or whatever it is, whatever you might want to call it. You know,
we had an episode on that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't like calling it a game, but it's a teaching tool. We're not really playing a game.
Yeah.
You know, for me, a game is like, oh, let's take the ball and throw it in the net, you know. And this isn't. It is fun,
right,
with goals, and there's preventative things and resistance and obstacles, but it's like a learning tool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think these are the ways to kind of, you know,
optimize. Learn, yeah.
Optimize, and you got to be able to teach the stuff and limit the risk.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to teach to the skill in the room. And if you do these exercises, you can get really good at this one specific thing that we're doing, touching the first side of the collar. And you'll notice the guys who are really good at gripping are very good at that.
Right.
Right? And then those guys, two black belts doing that same drill, looks very different from two green belts doing the same drill, but they're all learning.
Yeah, yeah.
And that game will never be boring.
Yeah.
Because you're still trying new ways, right?
Yeah.
Opening the hand out, parrying with the other hand, and going over the back.
Yeah.
Right, and you just give them a couple of tools.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
That makes sense. So now, I want to talk a little bit about class management, but also want to touch on the traditional methods like uchikomis and randori, like how they play a role.
Yeah.
So class, we already kind of talked about class management, you know, about like short instructions and whatnot. Anything else you need to work watch out for?
Class management, when you're teaching, you're scanning the room at all times for attention, right?
Yeah.
You're looking for the attentiveness.
Yeah.
And when you see some people like chilling off in the distance, or even when they're asking questions, and I know I got a little bit of heat, stop asking dumb questions in class, you know? And I'll tell you, man, like ever since I said that, people are a little bit weird asking me questions or whatever it is. And now when I get a question, I sort of make a mental note and note it later on whether the question is really good or not. And the data shows like a lot of the times they're just asking questions that I'd be repeating myself, which means I'm not doing a good enough of a job presenting the information.
Right.
They're bored, they're daydreaming, and then they're not paying attention, they miss something, right? So there's a lot of different factors at play, because teaching, it's give and take, you know. You have to have good learners and good teachers, that it's a conversation, really.
Yeah.
So I think like class management, you have to be scanning the room to see if people are engaged.
Yeah.
Even when you're doing the drill, like that first hand on the collar, you'll notice if you did 2 minute goes and five rounds, by round four and five, people aren't doing that drill anymore. They're not.
Yeah, yeah.
The perfect time is 1 minute or a minute 30.
Yeah.
Maybe 3 to 5, somewhere in between, depending on who's in the room.
Yeah.
And what else has been taught, how it integrates the other thing. if the theme is right side versus left side, and it's like, I cannot express how important it is to put your hand on first if you want that inside position, mm-hmm. right? But that means nothing if the people in the room are all beginners and they don't know whether they want inside or outside position.
Right, right.
And then you get a regular teacher that's been doing judo their whole life. They'll say, right side versus left side, Kenka Yotsu, okay? Inside position is always better. This is how you do Ouchi Taitoshi from here. Bang, bang. And then just drill that for 30 minutes. Not a very good lesson, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
The premise is the premise itself is wrong. It's not always the best. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, right side versus left side. Do you like inside or outside position? Outside position. Okay. Pretend for the sake of this drill that you want outside and he wants outside.
Mm-hmm. Right. Go.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And sometimes there's not enough right and lefties. So it's like, all right, who's interested in pretending to be a lefty?
Be a lefty, yeah.
Right? Or sometimes it's like, all right, we're doing 2 minute goes. It's like 1 minute, 1 minute. Both sides have to flip flop. You have to be bi.
Go both ways. Yeah.
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 And you know, it's an interesting drill. And then some people, even at like green belt level, like, dude, I felt so comfortable.
Yeah.
Leading with my left leg and punching my left hand on the collar.
Right.
Do you think it's worth me going down this road of being a lefty? Yeah, why not? Try it. Who knows, you know? If you're and then, you know, everybody who's ever been taught judo be like, never switch.
That's a creative exploration, yeah. It could work if you have the good lefty game. Yeah. People say not to... People tell people not to switch because a lot of times they don't have anything. They're just switching out of frustration. All right, so that's class management. Attention is the key, you know, scanning for attentiveness. You need to have everyone's attention.
Yeah.
And that saves a lot of time and better learning environment, all that.
Yeah.
So now, let's talk about uchikomis, the 1,000 uchikomis and our randori sessions. Yeah. Like,
we literally do, at the beginning of the class, guys, class just started, you have 5 minutes to do uchikomi.
Just a warm-up.
Do it now. I don't give a shit. Weekend and bullshit. How was your kid? Whatever it is. Do more stuff you want to explore. You can just use it to go in and just warm up your body. Guys, this is a warm-up. You should not be bullshit. How was your kid? Whatever it is.
Yeah,
usually, all right, guys, 5 minutes to do drills. That's it. 5 minutes coming. Go. Yeah. All right, guys, bring it in. We're going to do instruction.
Right.
First 3 minute clip of instruction, they go do it. Another 3 minutes, they go do it. Another 3 minutes, they go do it. All right. What we're going to do now, first hand touch on the collar. Right? Or 50-50, we're going to start trying to gain position. This is not a freaking combative game.
Yeah.
Trade off wins and losses. If you're losing in position, stay in the pocket, try to fight out of it. Winners can show feints and techniques and blah, 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 blah. Okay? How many lefties do we have in the room? Who's working right versus left Kenkaiotsu? Okay, make sure you grab yourself a lefty. Okay?
Right.
Things like this.
And then what do you do randori right after that?
Usually nagekomi, three-person uchikomi, those are also some sort of guided thing, right?
Right, right, right.
And it's like a little bit more impact, higher impact. Maybe we go right into grip fighting after that, you know?
Yeah, I see. And so then, increase the intensity a little bit in order to prepare for randori.
Yes. Okay. Maybe I'll do newaza too, who knows?
Yeah. what kind of throw is newaza? That was the funniest thing Eugene has ever said. He's so funny. Anyway, so then... To wrap up, okay, so we got, I think we gave all this more modern structure on how to run a judo class. But so what do you, I can already see people commenting like, oh, you gotta do, beginners have to do a lot of uchikomis to get, you know, get used to the movement and all that and then to be more fluid and all that. Do you see that? Because from a certain perspective, I kind of see the point.
Yes and no. Yes and no. Because if you've done true Japanese judo, like in Japan, in a traditional sense, I'm talking like 5-6 every single day, 2-3 hours every single day for decades on end. You've been to Japan multiple times. You competed on the international stage. You've been around some of the best judo teachers in the planet.
Yeah.
Okay? You've been around that. Then you could guide people into doing good uchikomi. Right? But majority of the time, if you don't have an eye for it, people are just reinforcing bad habits over and over and over and over and over
again.
So it's really worth your time having these guys do all these bad uchikomis. And, you know, they can't even diagnose it because that's how they learned it. And it's not their fault. It's not their fault. A lot of us have jobs and doing this as like a hobby for the love of it. We just don't have the time or the energy to focus on it the way we want to.
I see.
But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be a judo teacher. You should 100% be a judo teacher.
Yeah. But
you still have to get your education, right?
Yeah.
And it's through listening to podcasts like this and, you know, buying all my shows.
That's, I see. So the quality of, because of the, because not a lot of people have gotten the best education around the proper way to do chikomis, it can in turn reinforce bad habits.
Reinforce bad habits, and it's a combination of a lot of things. Yeah. Right? If you have 4 hours to do judo every single day,
yeah,
then yeah, do an hour of good uchikomi.
Yeah.
And there's schools in Japan that have that.
Yeah, right, right.
For an hour, we're just doing uchikomi and
finish. Oh my god.
Kokushikan's like that.
Yeah.
Especially at the middle school level, yes.
Oh, they wanna get the drills in, right? Or when they're young, right?
Dude, university level, they don't do any uchikomi. They're like, all right guys, jog around the mat for freaking 10 minutes.
Mm.
We'll listen to music, we'll bullshit. Mm. Talk about your day, get your mind right. And then we're going to do 10 minutes of uchikomi. Go.
Just to warm up.
Not guided. Not guided. Everyone's expected to know how to do uchikomi. All right, guys. We're doing randori now. 7 by 7. 7 minute rounds. Right? Seven cycles of it. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're finished with that. All right. We're going to do 5 by 5 neiwaza. Go. Hit it. Okay. We're going to go back to our feet. 8 by 5. And then we're done for the day. You know?
I see.
And then at the end of it, Jiu Kenkyu, like go work on it by yourself, combinations, drills, we'll do whatever you want for 20-30 minutes.
Oh, but Jiu Kenkyu actually means to like it's like a free experimentation
or free study. Free
study, yeah.
Yeah, Jiu Kenkyu, right? So that's the model. But if you go to a middle school program, they're teaching Ippon Seinagi, 100 times, blah, 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 over and over. They might be doing 1,000, you know? But we don't have the time to do that in like this society that if you're listening to this podcast, you don't have the luxury to be doing that.
Yeah.
And nor do you want to do that.
And although hobbyists, you know, the brains, you know, your brain is not as like, or body are malleable as like middle school kids who've been doing for a while and all. Yeah. It's a different context. So then the problem is that a lot of the judo teachers in America bring that model and try to, that works well for kids and apply that to adults.
It can work for adults too, if you have the time.
If you have the time, yeah.
The issue is this. A guy in Japan goes through this system, moves to the United States to teach judo, and goes, when I was a young man, I did that, right? You have to do 1,000 uchikomis a day or you'll be nobody. So now all these guys are like, all right, let me do 1,000 uchikomis and they're not doing anything else. They're reinforcing bad habits. And a lot of old Japanese judo teachers aren't very, like, feedback heavy.
What, do you think your dad was?
Pops
was like that, yeah?
Yeah.
Like, it was like that?
I remember when I first went to Kokushikan when I was, like, 15 years old.
Yeah.
And I got there, and I was doing a chikomi, and they were like, what the hell is that?
Oh, they thought your chikomis were horrible, okay.
They were like, they could clearly tell that I was not from there.
Uh-huh.
Oh. My face is Japanese.
Your name's Japanese. Good. Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, this kid's a high school national champion over there. So they're like, this kid must be pretty good.
Right? Oh.
I have the look.
Yeah.
And then once I started doing uchikomi, they were like, no, 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 no.
Oh. So they had
and
to,
then they taught me how to do ochigari.
They
go, put the foot here, open the gi chest, angles like this, angles like that. And I was offended. I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, I know how to do that.
Like, I'm already a high school national champion. I'm like an all-state wrestler. Like, what do you mean? And they're like, no. You gotta. And then I was like embarrassed. And we drilled that for like 3 hours.
Oh,
and then it was like, all right, we're doing Tachiwaza Randori. And I got smoked.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn.
I got smoked.
Man, that must have been an experience.
Yeah, it was horrible. But it was the best thing that's ever happened.
I know,
at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, so, you know, you got somebody going through the system, coming over and teach it, and now all of a sudden, generation after generation, they're teaching it this way in the setting of, hey, there's a membership fee. Hey, this is a hobby thing that you can do and learn. You have to do 1,000 chikomis.
They're not a hobby then.
Horrible. It's wrong. It's just straight up wrong. Don't do that anymore. With chikomi, there's a big, like, point of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
It's not huge ROI, especially if you can only have an hour to train in the evenings. three times a week, 2 hours of training in the evening, twice a week. It's not worth spending all your time doing.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't do it. Do 30 Uchikomis a day.
5 minutes as a warm-up.
5 minutes is enough, really.
Yeah.
Because it's so much outside of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
All right, I think we covered it all. I hope you guys found this episode very helpful. Yes. I think lately we've been focusing a lot on like how to run the dojo, how to teach in judo at the dojo, kids and adults. Make sure to check out the kids episode with Joe Coker.
Yep.
Anything else?
Yeah, man, we're gonna start having more guests on, I think. So if you know someone that's super interesting, let me know. Let Peter know. Don't let me know. You can find him on Instagram, YUKW. What is it again?
No, it's Kunu Peter, KEUNWOPETER. You can hit up Shintaro too.
He'll
somehow flow back to me. Either way.
I'll just forward it. But yeah, let me know. And thank you very much for listening. And we're always looking for sponsors to sponsor the podcast.
Yeah.
So thank you guys.
Great. Yeah. All right. That's about it. And we'll see you guys in the next episode.